Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is Gene Alert.
And this is Kim Knight. And on today's episode, we talked about entrepreneurship in private practice as a therapist and also learning about anxiety in entrepreneurship, learning about balance. Gene even shared some of his anxieties or what gives him anxieties and his triggers. Mm-hmm. It's a great episode. You'll learn that it's never too late to become an entrepreneur. And with the right team and the right folks around you, that good things and all things can happen.
Yes. Tune in right now.
We are amazing because our passion is limitless and our drive is intense. Therefore, you will not deny our grind. You are now listening to the Faith Grind Inspired podcast with your host, Gene Alert.
Welcome back to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspired podcast. I am your host, Gene Alert. And today we have a very special guest, good friend, Kim Knight.
Hello. Thank you. And well, I'm so excited to be here today. Was something that I was looking forward to be able to discuss, you know, some of my journey and how I became an entrepreneur. So it's super exciting, and thank you so much for having me.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Listen, the way this show is, it's all about the mindset of entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't have anybody else talk about the mindset except you.
And why would you say that?
Because you help people with their mindset and their gain their minds right. And so I felt like it was perfect to have you on. Okay. Because you can help all the entrepreneurs. It's towards the end of the first quarter of this 2020. So I figured, you know, we need to help the entrepreneurs get their mind right for second quarter. So first of all, tell the people where you're from. Tell them about you.
Okay, sure. So my name is Kim Knight, and I'm a licensed mental health counselor. I own a private practice. It's located in Valley Stream, New York. And I've been in practice full-time for about 2.5 years and part-time altogether in practice 4 years. And, you know, the journey, it hasn't been a straight path. However, it was necessary, the path in which I ended up taking to get there. And, you know, being an entrepreneur, as you said, mindset is the key. And that's one of the things that I really had to make sure I had a handle on prior to jumping into private practice. Because typically in the helping field, especially when it comes to psychotherapy or social workers who also do private practice or counselors like myself, it's not typically considered a industry that you can make a lot of money in. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people out of school, they go right into working in clinics or they work in agencies. And, you know, the pay is not really that great there. And even in school, we're not really taught how to think like an entrepreneur and to even consider that as a pathway. So it's kind of a new thing now that a lot of us are now going into our own practices and doing full-time and part-time work and really good work, too, and making money doing it. But it really starts with a mindset shift. You have to recognize, first of all, you have to believe that it is possible. Mm-hmm. Find people that are doing it so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel and kind of, you know, allow them to help guide you and then really do the work. And I think that's where some of it becomes difficult because, you know, when you're in the helping field, you have a particular focus, mm-hmm. which is really, you know, working with your clients and really helping them to improve their lives or deal with mental illness or, you know, situations that they're going on in their life that they're struggling with, depression, anxiety. And that's really the focus, and that's what we're trained to do. But there's a whole nother hat that you have to wear when you decide to go into private practice and understanding the business side, understanding marketing, understanding, you know, how to get your name out there and set fees, budgeting, expenses, you know, all of that is another piece. And because we're not technically trained in that, or even, you know, it's not even part of our studies, mm-hmm. it can be very intimidating.
So now, not to cut you off.
Absolutely.
So there was so much that we could uncover just with that part, mm-hmm. right? The schooling part that they don't teach you entrepreneurship, right? So for you, when did that bug hit you? Like what
part? Yes, great question. I'm glad you asked. So like I said, my path was not a straight path. So I did undergrad, Stony Brook University. Shout out to Stony Brook.
Yeah.
Okay. And a lot of my friends went into social work or they went into education and those types of fields. And because of the stigma attached to, oh, you don't really make a lot of money there. You know, not that I want to make money, but I knew that really wasn't what I wanted to do. So I went and got my MBA right after I finished undergrad. So in completing my MBA, I really wasn't sure what direction I wanted to go in, but I knew the business side and what it was to have a business or to be in business, understanding what the role of business is and the corporate mindset and all of that. And I actually went into healthcare and I started off right out of finishing my MBA. I went into I was a director of a home care agency. And I did that for about 6 years. Hated it, but realized that I did enjoy, there were aspects of the healthcare industry that I liked. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I don't know how, but I ended up in pharmaceutical sales.
Really?
And I did pharmaceutical sales for about 9 years. But in that time, and I actually worked part of my years in psychiatry. I was promoting psychiatric drugs to psychiatrists. And it was a wonderful experience because I really got to understand the psych world and understand, you know, mental illness. And in that time frame, I actually went back to become a certified life coach, wanted to help people in their careers or in their life. But I wanted to do a little more. I wanted to understand a little bit more about mm-hmm. the psych piece. So I ended up going back to school. And I went on mostly their dime because they had tuition reimbursement.
Nice.
And I went back and got my master's in mental health counseling. So now this was over a time, you know, this was 10 years later almost before I finished. And but I knew I didn't want to do agency work. I was, once you're in the field, let me tell you, I was in sales, doing pharma stuff. I was a rep, calling on doctors for 9 years. There's no way I could go back into an office building and do any kind of agency work or clinic work. I knew that I needed to be on my own. So I had to figure out how I could do that. So I knew about private practice or that as an option. But, you know, the mindset thing starts to work on you when you're used to being an employee.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain mindset that goes along with being an employee, and you know, there are pros and cons to all of it.
Absolutely.
You know, I was used to having a salary. I was used to having vacation time. Well, let me tell you, when I was a pharma rep, I had almost worked myself up to 6 weeks.
Wow.
So, and you used to bonuses. You get bonuses at the end of the year. I had a car. I mean, it was a lot of perks to that job. But there were also, you know, the perks started to disappear
mm-hmm.
as healthcare changed and managed care changed the game. And also, you get tired of working for somebody else's, you know, dream or their definition of success. And it just became, you know, what they wanted from us as reps just became unrealistic. So I said, I was finishing up school. I was doing my clinicals. And I said, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do my best and see if, test this private practice thing out. And, you know, it's a scary thing because now, everything that you do, you're only going to get out what you put in. And there's a direct correlation. Like, you know, when you're a rep, you can blow a day, you know, in the city, just walking around, you can make that day up the next day. And no matter what, you're still going to get a paycheck, right? Your paycheck isn't going to change. But now I have to be accountable to myself. And whatever I put in is what I'm going to get out. And that is a really scary place to be in the beginning because it's new. It's not familiar. There's a lot of risk. And there's also, you know, the thought that, wow, if I don't do this right, I could, you know, screw up my life. I could screw up my livelihood. I could screw up my family. Like, there's a lot that you have to think about in there. But I had to believe in myself that I could do it.
That's the faith.
Mm-hmm, that's absolutely the faith. And I, you know, surrounded myself with people that were already doing it, mm-hmm. did the research, asked the questions, came up with a plan. I started out part-time, so I would see clients in the evening while I was working. At that time, I was working for Listerine, so I was promoting Listerine to dentist office. So totally different feel, but that was my daytime job, my daytime job while I hustled at night.
Yes.
Working with clients, doing what I knew that I truly wanted to do.
You know, Kim, I love, while I was listening to your story, thank you, what I was thinking about is every part of that journey prepared you for this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Absolutely.
Because if you didn't do the pharmaceutical sales and do the outside setting appointments, because that's sort of, sales is the main part, right? Because you have to figure out how to get clients into your own private practice. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to pitch. You have to, like, sell your product, yep. you know, and convince someone, why go with you versus this other competitor,
right.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all training, you know? Even the Listerine thing, you know?
No, listen, let me tell you, it's so true because it, technically, you know, my territory was my business.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get the sales. You know, I had numbers that I had to, quotas that I needed to meet.
Mm-hmm.
There were relationships that I needed to build. You know, it really does overlap and is a nice way to transition into the next phase of my life. And in fact, it actually winds up being a direct, having a direct effect because so a lot of the referrals that I get come from doctor's offices.
Exactly.
So, you know, the edge that I had was I knew how to communicate with doctors. I understood what their needs were and understood how to sell my services to them. So now I'm no longer selling them a drug. I'm now selling them my services, and I'm able to tap into their need and create, you know, a marketing plan that allows them to recognize how I can benefit them.
I love it.
So, and a lot of my colleagues don't really have that background or experience. So I'm able to help them now understand what their strengths are and how they can approach a doctor's office. You know, just because they're a doctor and an MD, while yes, they've gone through a lot of training and a lot of education and always, you know, should be respected in that way, we still have a skill set that they don't have. And, you know, some people get intimidated by doctors and it's like, you know, they don't feel confident in their skill set and what they have to offer. But the doctors need us because, you know, they're the ones on the front line seeing the depression, seeing the anxiety, seeing the struggles that people are having, because a lot of times patients unload in their office. You know, they're going because they don't feel good. And the doctor's like, so how you doing? And they just unload, you know, everything that's going on. And a lot of doctors, first of all, they don't have the time to deal with that. Some of them don't really want to deal with that. You know, they want to figure out what's medically wrong with you, prescribe something and have you go on your way. Not that they don't care, but their role is a little different. So if I'm able to get in there and explain to them, listen, I can take those patients off your hands. You can look like gold when you're able to give them a card and they come to me and I'm able to help them and take them off your hands. So little things like that helped when it came to me building my practice, because I was able to let doctors know, listen, I'm in the area. This is, I'm somebody you can refer to. Here are the insurances I take. And it works out in a very interesting
so
way.
How let's talk about this, right? How, because you said the key word insurance, because I was thinking about, I said, I know it's difficult to, right, to sign up with the insurance.
Yes, so that's a
that
whole,
yes,
so there's a credentialing process that we have to go through, and there are, you know, forms that we have to fill out. A lot of the, not a lot, but depending on the area and where you practice, some of the insurance companies are closed, so they're not even taking on. But, you know, I'll be honest, you know, I'm only on two insurance panels,
mm-hmm.
Because I really wanted more of a self-pay practice, mm-hmm. or, you know, where clients pay out of pocket. I mean, for a number of reasons. Insurance is great, and I don't, you know, want to knock it in turn when people need or want to use their insurance. That's absolutely important, and that's why it's there. But from the business side of things, yeah, the rates are horrible. You know, so it's hard. That's why a lot of people in my industry only do it part-time, because it would be very difficult. I wouldn't say it's not impossible, but you're definitely going to hit a ceiling quicker when you only take insurance, because you are held and bound to the rates that you agreed to. And those rates are what they are. So I can't go in and charge more than the rate that I'm contracted with. So I made the decision to figure out what are the top two paying insurance companies in my area. Are they open? Can I get on them? And I did that.
Smart.
And then the rest are self-pay.
Yeah.
Now, one of the challenges in my area is setting fees, because therapy is kind of seen, you know, as something that people should be able to get with insurance, mm-hmm, which a lot of people do. But not necessarily, it's not in a stage yet where people are so willing to pay out of pocket. And, you know, some of the fees, depending on your area, can be expensive. And the reason why is because, especially if you're doing it full time, the reason why is because, say, like a doctor is able to bill for multiple services within an hour. They're able to see 4, 5, 6, 7 patients in an hour. So they get to bill for those patients. Then they get to bill for any kind of procedures they send them out for. And, you know, so they are able to bill in multiple ways for one patient. We're seeing one person, 45 minutes. So the most, I say within a healthy range, 7 or 8 a day. That's it. So we're not billing multiple areas or for multiple services in an hour. It's just that one service for that 1 hour. And if you as an insurance company are going to pay me 60, 70, 80 bucks, I'm going to hit a ceiling real fast. It's hard to, it would be hard to make a good living, you know, doing that. Yeah. So, you know, the rates when you do self-pay, especially when folks are full-time, you're going to pay over $100 per session, mm-hmm, for therapy. And the question is, do people see the value in it? Some do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, right now I'm probably 60-40, 60 self-pay, 40 insurance. And that ratio is shifting every year, because I want to get the self-pay up as high as I can.
Absolutely.
And start to, you know. But it's a tough decision, though, because, you know, as somebody who is in the helping field, you know, you don't want to exclude people. You don't want to say, you know, well, I don't take your insurance, so you know, I can't really work with you unless, yeah, you want to pay out of pocket. Or you want people to have access to this type of service because it's so important. It's so life-changing and life-saving. Mm-hmm. But I have a business to run.
Yeah, so,
right?
You know, that's the challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes they say even creatives are not business people, right? And how can someone who wants to save lives, right?
Yep.
Have a business.
Right.
And those,
yeah,
two worlds, it's like, it's, you know,
it's definitely challenging.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
It's challenging. But, you know, you have to make a choice, right? I'm doing this. I'm making a living doing this. I do it full time. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do is I'll open up 2 or 3 slots pro bono. I don't even do slide and scale because that gets too, you know, cumbersome and it's just a lot. So I'll do two or three pro bono, and then that's my contribution, you know. And for me, that works. And then I have colleagues that I work with that I have confidence in, and I will refer clients to them who might take their insurance. I try to find good clinics in the area that I think are reputable and can help, and I'll refer clients there. So I have my referral base or referral sources that I feel comfortable in sending folks to, because at the end of the day, I'm not going to be able to help everybody. And, you know, I think I, you know, idealistically, you come out of school and it's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna save the world, and you know, but you know, when it comes down to it, you're not gonna be able to help everyone. Yeah. So you have to, you know, have a good business sense, you know, niche if you can. I've niched down to a certain type of client that I want to work with, and that also gives you a little bit of luxury to set your fees. Mm-hmm. Because when you're niched, people feel or recognize that you have something that they absolutely need. And, you know, when people are in need and they see the value in getting that help, then they'll tend to, you know, have the money to pay.
Absolutely. Something just popped up in my mm-hmm. mind, and I just have to ask you, right? So when you first got into the field, right, mm-hmm. Not too many people got into the business, right? Now, Charlamagne and all these guys, they made it like mental health, yeah. Like, get a therapist. Everyone should have a therapy. Because in our culture, therapy wasn't like something that you went to and were proud about, right? And so, mm-hmm. but you need it. Everyone really needed it, but you know how it is. So even when I was younger, when I first started entrepreneurship, if you're an entrepreneur or you owned your own business, that just meant you were unemployed. You didn't have a job. It wasn't cool.
That's right.
Right? And I remember my mom used to cry when she was telling her friends, like, my son is a real estate person. He's an entrepreneur. He's talking about entrepreneurship. And she used to be so mad. Like, she was so disappointed. But now, it's like, yo, that's my son.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there so, is definitely so a same change thing, right? Happening.
Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you see, how do you feel about two things? Warn people just jumping on the boat now because they're like, hey, but you've been doing this.
So well, you're talking about from the therapist side
the therapist
or from
side
the client
and
side?
And the client side.
Well, you know, I don't think, you know, when you're doing it clinically, I don't think it's something you could just jump into.
Jump into, okay.
Because you do need the education. You need licensure because New York State has requirements that you have to meet certain number of hours, certain courses, certain degrees. So that piece is a commitment.
Wait, when I mean not that part.
Uh-huh.
The coaches.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What
so now coaching. Okay, so now I'm.
I mean, yeah.
And I can speak from both sides because I'm both. I'm both a therapist and a life coach. So there are different avenues and there is some overlap, but, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the difference between coaching and therapy is that coaching is more so taking a person where they are and moving them to where they want to be, right? And, you know, notwithstanding, you know, depression, anxiety, and now those things may exist, but coaches typically are not trained to deal with, you know, real mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have some cognitive behavioral stuff that we're trained in as coaches that, you know, walks the line a little bit, I'll be honest. And there is some, you know, fuzziness with it. Like, because I'm a therapist now, that takes precedence. So technically, I shouldn't just say that I'm a coach. I should say I'm a coach and a therapist because I'm held to a higher standard than mm-hmm. a coach is. However, I do have clients that fall more under the coaching umbrella than they do the therapy umbrella. So it is a mixed bag. And, you know, so coaches, yeah, I think coaches need to be careful and need to be okay with referring people who they recognize have some sort of a mental illness or a mental mood disorder or something, you know, because depression, anxiety are real things. And they do interfere with a person's ability to progress. But I do believe that there's room for everybody. You just have to know what lane you're in mm-hmm. at any given time. For example, when I'm working with clients, if I'm coaching them and I'm not their therapist, I'm their coach, I have to clearly state that, and they have to actually sign off on consent forms that let us know that in an agreement, we're not doing therapy, we're doing coaching. And if at any point you need therapy, like I can't even then turn around and be that therapist. Ethically and legally, in some respect, I'm supposed to refer them now to a therapist. Mm. So there are definite guidelines. Does everybody follow guidelines? No.
No.
But There are things in place that allow for clear separation.
Okay.
So how do I feel about coaches? I think that they're great. I think, you know, there are lots of business coaches. For example, I'm a business coach also because I have now help other therapists move into their own private practices.
Nice.
I have a business partner. Her name is Lisa Savage. She has like a multi-million-dollar practice in Delaware that services children in the Delaware School District. And we've gotten together and created an online membership site for clinicians of color.
Nice.
So clinicians of color now have resources through our site where they can learn how to set up their private practice. We do everything from mindset to marketing to understanding what you need in order to get started. Everything is covered in the site. And for $31 a month, you have access to all of that. We bring on trainers. We bring people who might do a master class for an hour. We pay them to train for an hour, and they do Q&A at the end, whatever their specialty is. So it's a tremendous resource in the community.
Look at you, entrepreneur.
Yeah. Listen,
I love it.
Multiple streams of income is where it's at, right?
Well, and also subscriptions.
That's it.
You guys.
So now we have over 100-something members, and what's that? A few thousand dollars a month.
Yeah,
that's just income coming.
I love it.
Yeah. So I mean, but it is work. It's not passive. I'm not going to say it's passive. There's no such thing as passive income, right?
No.
So it does require us to upkeep, to stay connected with the community, to let them know we're there, to let them know what we have coming up. We have trainers set from now till May, mm-hmm. where you know 2 times a month we have people coming on. So, and we're also trying to continue to build it because it does require a lot of work. But I'll tell you, it's like one of the best, you know, business models out there. If you have the ability to run it and to grow it, it can be tremendous. So we're hoping to really grow that. I mean, I have colleagues of other persuasions, okay, mm-hmm. who do very well. I mean, they're banking $20,000 a month in membership sites. And they charge double what we charge. And people pay $60 a month, $70 a month for all of the information that they can have access to 24/7. They get to go online and take a course at their leisure and know that every month that they have that available to them. And, you know, a few hundred people in there, you charge the right monthly fee. You have a nice income coming in on
that. Exactly. And then if you have that in place, you could have your private practice and have your clients and not have to
absolutely
really stress out because you have one thing,
yes.
you know, balancing it out.
That's right. That's
right. I love it.
So, yeah. So we have that. And then I'm also an author. I did a book. I'm a self-published author.
Nice. Tell us about the book.
So I did a book a couple of years ago. It's called Relationship Recipes.
Okay.
And basically it's just each chapter talks about a specific part of a relationship that you need to focus on and how to kind of work it. So, but I did it as a recipe book. So it might say honesty cupcakes or something like that. And then you have like your steps, which is your recipe. And then the ingredients are what you need to do in order to maintain honesty or have honesty in a relationship. So there's trust, honesty, forgiveness, communication. All of that is in the book. So I did that on my own. Nice. I said, you know what? So it's the mindset is so important because you just have to believe. And I did this. I didn't start this journey, honestly, uh-huh. until my mid-40s. So that's the other thing. It's never too late.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to believe, you know, and have the faith that it can happen and surround yourself with the right people.
Question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you grow up around entrepreneurs?
Nope.
No.
Not a one.
So when you told your family, you were going to quit your job and go on your own.
Okay. So now I'm in my mid-40s. So I'm married. My husband is in education. Uh-huh. So he's doing his thing. He's getting his PhD and he's working in schools and stuff like that. And I have 2 kids. I ain't really time. This is what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I had a plan. I had a plan on, you know, and I had the right people around me. So, you know, but I think for that piece, it was more they would have to see it to understand it. I think that if I, and you know, in all honesty, I didn't even really know, I didn't have a clear vision of what it was going to be at that point. I just knew what I wanted. And, you know, all I envisioned myself was having a room, sitting with somebody, and doing therapy. That's really where it all started. And I really didn't have a clear idea of what that was going to look like. I just kind of allowed things to unfold as they, and just stayed obedient and really paid attention. And like I said, you know, got in touch with the right people at the right time to help me to answer my questions. Online. Listen, everything is online. You can search, research, you can Google, YouTube it. I mean, everything is there for you. And I just, you know, used it to my advantage. But no, I they've been very supportive. But like I said, I don't think it's something that I could have said that they would have fully grasped because they had never really seen it themselves.
They didn't see it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the end of, the third month of the first quarter, mm-hmm. right? My question for you is, like, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that come on this show, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the main struggles, right, that people come in even off mic is balance, right? Mm-hmm. How do you balance a business, family, and even personal, like your own personal space, like time for you?
Well, it hasn't always been easy, especially, you know, when I was getting started, it was hard. Being in the school part was difficult because I was working full time. I was in school full time. I was trying to do an internship. With, you know, for my job, because I had to, for my schooling, because I had to do a certain number of hours. I was being a mom, I was being a wife. It was hard. I mean, I guess I was able to have a little more balance because I was in the field, so I had a lot of flexibility on my schedule and my time. Now, listen, one of the things that I was determined to do when I became when I went into private practice, I said, I'm not working on Mondays. I'm not working on Fridays. I said, I'm not seeing clients, because there was a time when I hated Sunday nights and Monday mornings. And I said, I'm eliminating that feeling right off the bat, and I am not working on Mondays. So, and I've kind of held to that.
Okay.
So my schedule, I see clients Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday mornings. I don't even do a full Saturday because I want my Saturday to myself. So I'll start 7 a.m. Saturday morning, and clients come because they need the help, right? I start 7 a.m. and I'm done by noon.
Nice.
So that was something I committed to right out the gate. So technically, I have Sundays, Mondays, and Fridays. Now, a lot of that is filled up with rest, because the worst thing to do is be tired trying to see a client. So I do have to get my rest. But also, these other things that I want to get into, you know, so publishing the book, I have a podcast, the podcast, that's the thing. I haven't been able to do it and stick with it as much as the consistency of it, because it does take time. And so that's been a challenge. And I've put a lot of focus on my income generating businesses, and then working the site, the membership site, because that takes time. So that's what my Mondays, Fridays, and Sundays are filled with. But I do the best I can. My kids are older now. My son is 18, my daughter's 22. So they're kind of moving into their own world, doing their own thing, you know. Right. I mean, I'm still involved, but I don't have to shuffle them anywhere, you know. they have their cars, they have their activities, their friends they go to. So, you know, my husband and I are like on the edges of empty nesters. So for me, the timing was good. But balance is something that I do keep in the forefront of my mind, because things can get out. And there are seasons where things are out of balance. Mm-hmm. You know, the holiday season tends to be a busy time for practices. You know, it can be difficult for those that are grieving. It can be difficult for those that don't have family. So November to December are usually busy in our practices because people need the support.
Mm. Interesting.
So there are there are different seasons that require more time. But you hope that maybe over the course of a year that it kind of all balances out. Mm-hmm.
So what tips can you give an entrepreneur who either just got married or just had a kid or has a young one or doesn't have a kid at all and just trying to balance you know, because it's sometimes it's difficult when you're an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. but you're married to, say, a 9-to-5er.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. when they get home at 5 or 6, it's like you're supposed to turn it off. But technically, what you're still going on
24/7. So yeah, I think communication is the key. Yeah, no, communication is the key. You have to constantly be in communication and not just talking, but listening and really trying to understand what the needs are and finding ways and sometimes creative ways to meet the needs. Like, for example, a 9-to-5 or like 2 9-to-5ers who are married, they're time together is kind of built into their life, right? Because they get off at 5, they get home, they're in the house together, they're off on weekends. That when you don't have traditional schedules or traditional careers, that is when it's important to be intentional about your marriage or whatever it is that you're working on, because that time is not built in to your life. So you have to schedule a date night. You have to schedule a vacation. You have to schedule time out of the day where you can pay attention and give all of your attention. Now, in a 9-to-5er's lives, maybe it's from 5 until you go to bed. In entrepreneurship, maybe it'd be set an hour a day. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, having the communication so that you kind of understand, you know, communication is not just about, like I said, talking to each other. It's also really trying to understand each other and really hearing what the other person is saying and where they're coming from, and then trying to meet somewhere in the middle. And I think that when that happens, you have a good shot at things working out. Just recognizing that it's not going to be just built in by default. You have to be intentional about paying attention, about giving it the time that it needs. And it has to be compromised. You know, the 9-to-5er may have to recognize, listen, it's not going to be a whole 6 hours every day that I'm going to, you know, have the time and attention. But if the entrepreneur is willing to give 1 or 2 hours, now you have some balance there. So it's give and take. And yeah, there are some seasons, like I said, where things may be totally out of whack. You know, maybe you got a huge projects going on for a couple of months that's going to take you away, you know, but you got to make that commitment to get back, because relationships don't typically run well on autopilot. You really have to be intentional about stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so another thing that I want to tackle is partnerships, mm-hmm. right? So how does that work when, you know, you have two people who are running their business come together? Like, how do you find the right partner and, you know?
Yeah, partnerships can be tricky, because I've heard some nightmares. Mm-hmm. And there are never any guarantees, because relationships are not always easy. I think for my business partner, we got very lucky. We found each other online, because there was a group that I had started called Clinicians of Color on Facebook. And because we as clinicians of color didn't really have a space for ourselves. So I created the group, and Lisa came on board, and just, you know, you can, you know, when you're online and you do the social media thing, you can kind of catch a person's vibe by the way, you know, and it, granted, you know, there's a lot of things that go on that aren't true because people put their best face forward. But over the course of a year or so, and because of the group and the focus of the group, you can kind of get a feel for who's who and what they're doing. And she was getting ready to teach. She was getting ready to offer online class on marketing, I think it was. And I reached out to her and I said, hey, you know, I like what you're doing. You know, maybe we can do something collaboratively. And this was just for, you know, some small one or two classes. But then over the years, we formed a relationship online, and it just evolved into something really special where, you know, we trust each other. We trust mm-hmm. each other's judgment. We support each other, both in business and in personal life. And what's really interesting is that I've only met her in person twice.
Seriously?
Only twice.
Wow.
Yep. So and the first time was this past April. September was the first time, and then again in November, because we actually put together a clinical training for clinicians of color in Delaware. And of course, I had to go because we were the facilitators of the, or the hosts.
That's pretty
of the,
cool.
And that was the first time we met. And it was like we've known each other for years. But, you know, talk about nervous about being catfish. I'm like, oh, I kept saying, are you a real person? I hope you're a real person because we're finally going to meet. And, you know, everything that I thought she was online is who she was offline.
Oh,
and it's
cool.
been a very positive experience. And we have other things that we're trying to do. And she's a true entrepreneur, but also a clinician. And like I said, she runs a multi-million dollar practice in Delaware. So I look to her also for guidance and support. And then she looks to me too, because I have visions and I have things that I want to create. And we just work well together. So I say, do the best you can to get a feel for somebody. Mm-hmm. You certainly don't want to jump in after a few months, because it can get very ugly if you're not careful. And you really don't know people until money's involved, until you have to do deals, and then true colors tend to come out. So all I can say is there's never any guarantee. It's always going to be a risk. Mm-hmm. But to do the best you can, to be honest about, you know, the person that you're dealing with, if you see red flags, take heed to them. Don't pretend they don't exist. And just take it one step at a time. Have your contracts in place. Have your legal stuff in place to protect you the best way you can. And then, you know, you just move forward and take it one step at a time.
How do you... thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you... the question I want to really ask is it's like, all right, so I'm a consultant for branding, right? Mm-hmm. And real estate. But I have a person that I go to that helps me, because sometimes when you're in your business so much, you can't work on your business.
Yes.
So you need someone else to bring in to say, am I doing this right? Like, because sometimes you're too in it. So my question to you is, do you have a person that you go to, like, to say, look, I just need to talk to someone, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. you're listening to people 5 days a week,
yep.
4 days a week, you know, for like 8-9 hours, you know. So
I mean, there's two pieces to that. Uh-huh. So as clinicians, from a clinical side, it's always recommended and ethically correct to have what we call peer consultation.
Got it. Okay.
Peer, sometimes it can be supervision. Supervision usually occurs while you're in school working on your license, but then once you get your license, you might have peer consultation.
Okay.
There are peer consultation groups. Or sometimes you have a few clinicians that you feel are really good and have given you good support, because you might have a client that you feel like you're not getting anywhere with. And, you know, some clients will challenge your clinical skills and make you question why you went into this field. I'll be honest. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's good because it only makes me better. But still, you know, you should have those who have been in it longer than you, or who might have a specialty that you're not specializing in, that you can go to and bounce ideas off of, and they can give you good clinical advice or guidance. Then on the business side, yes, I have those who I've seen, who I've observed, you know, especially online, who are doing the work, who are being successful. Lisa, my business partner, being one of them, who I have good relationships with, who see what I'm doing. There are things that I might be able to offer, and then they can offer me the same thing. There's a lot of business coaches out there that I can tap into, that I can pay for their services, that they can help me get me to the next level when I'm ready. So, yeah, so I think that that's really important to have those people, and to be, you know, to have enough humility,
mm-hmm.
and enough to know yourself enough when you need that kind of support, and look for the right people to get it from.
Okay.
Because this, you know, you can't get into a bubble like, you know, I know it all and I'm good and I can do this on my own. But entrepreneurship is not really something you can do on your own.
No.
You really have to have a good support team around you. And that goes for business, that goes for clinical, that goes for personal. Like, you know, it's a team approach to entrepreneurship. And me as an entrepreneur, I need to make sure that I have the right people in the right positions.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Yeah.
And I see the focus. I see the passion. I see everything in your eyes. Like, it's like, it's yeah, I love
okay,
it.
Okay, good.
Love it. No, no, it's real. Do you have any tips for entrepreneurs that, you know, just out there in general, like for my mindset, to handle anxiety, because that's another thing. Because I'll tell you for myself, right? And I, you know, this is off the clock,
of course.
But it's just like, you know, there's parts of. So I like writing things down, right? So if I have a planner, and so if I look at that planner, and it's empty, right? But I know, because I was so busy running around doing actually handling the business, that I forgot to write in the planner.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm afraid to open the planner, because when I do open it, I see empty pages.
And it's going to look like
it's going to look like happening. There's nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell you, like, the anxiety hits me, mm-hmm. I start panicking, and now I'm trying to remember what I did, because I have to fill it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep, so, yep.
And when I can't, I'm like, I'll stay up all night and I'm trying. And then, so it's weird, but it's crazy.
I know, I get it.
But it's just like part of my.
Well, listen, anxiety is real. And yeah, I would suggest that it is a part in many ways of entrepreneurship, because there's a lot that's, you know, anxiety is about control oftentimes. Mm. And, you know, and when you feel like anxiety is about the future and maybe control or not having control in the future. And depression is often about the past, regrets or things that have happened that you can't really get past. So anxiety, you know, it's about finding areas of your life that you can control, because mm-hmm. there's some things that you can never be able to control. And in entrepreneurship, there are usually a number of things that you can't control, that are out of your control. Mm-hmm. And that in and of itself will probably bring on some level of anxiety, because there's the unpredictable nature of entrepreneurship is going to bring about fears and worries. I think one of the tips there is mm-hmm. expect that.
Expect
like that.
That
is going to be part of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
When it shows up, call it what it is. I'm anxious. What do I need to do now to get control again?
Yeah.
And then you try to find things that you can do to control it, which is pretty much what you did. Mm-hmm. You saw the thing was empty. Your anxiety flared up and like, oh my God. But you knew that you had things planned, because you're not, your lifestyle and the work that you do is not going to allow you to have a whole month.
No.
Where you don't have anything.
Oh my God. Right. Not a month. It'll be like a week.
Well, that anxiety kicked our real fast.
No, woo.
So right. So you recognize that, and then you took the time to, you know, fill it in, because you knew logically that was not the case, that mm-hmm. it wasn't empty. It just wasn't physically there. So I think that when you're able to recognize it and call it what it is, it makes it easier to address mm-hmm. versus getting sucked into it. And then that's when it becomes even more intense, because now you're feeling anxious, and then you're feeling anxious about feeling anxious. And now it's like, you know, and then it just becomes a cycle that starts to intensify. So for those types of situations, you know, call it what it is. Mm-hmm. If you're having that, you know, the heart palpitations mm-hmm. and the thoughts racing, deep breathing is a really good tool to use. Diaphragmic breathing to make sure that you get your heart rate back down. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's about control. Once you feel you're in control of your breathing, then it starts to kind of go out into other things, and you're able to kind of get your mind clear. And now you can say, you know what, let me take an hour to put these things in the calendar that I know that I have coming up. And then I know I'll feel a little better, because seeing it like this is really freaking me out. So it's getting to that point with less anxiety, but I'm never going to say you'll never have it.
Yeah.
Because I think there's an element of anxiety that's going to go along with being an entrepreneur.
The breathing exercises, right? Mm-hmm. I want to give them something else. So the breathing exercises, how long do you think a person should just stop and breathe for?
As long as it takes.
As long as it takes.
Yeah, because physiologically, your body will calm down, because by holding the breath, by taking the deep breath, and you take a deep breath, a deep as far as you can from way down in here, and you're holding it for 4 or 5 seconds and then releasing it through your mouth, it's going to slow your heart rate down.
Got it.
So once your heart rate starts to slow down, you start to feel calmness come over you. And also the thoughts that you might be having that are creating the worries and the fears, you've kind of pushed those aside because now you're focused on your breathing. So it's a way to kind of get in front of things. It's like almost like the car that's kind of without the driver, or you know, it's just kind of driving without somebody behind the steering wheel. The deep breathing allows you to jump in the driver's seat and kind of take the wheel. So not that it's going to change the car from moving, because the anxiety may still be there, but now you're managing it. You're in control of it versus it being in control of you.
I love that. So I have something that I tell all my students, because I teach entrepreneurship to kids in the school system. Oh, but I have a program called Groundwork. So episode 83 on the podcast, I actually brought some of those students from Southside, Jamaica, Queens. Yeah, okay. I brought them to the studio and we did a podcast. So the program is called Groundwork. And one of the ideas that I teach these kids is precaution versus cure, right? And so if they see something that's going to happen, to avoid it, you know, because it's easier to avoid than cure, right? So to one of the things, and even though I've been working on this, but I'm creating so I don't have that anxiety, at least for this part, because that book is real for me, right? Because I've had a planner since I was in high school, since high school. So now 20 years out, you know, it's like, and I still use a planner every, and I have my planners, you know, from 20 years ago. Wow. I still have, I keep them.
Okay.
Right? Because it's like my journals.
That's right.
So when I see a week empty, it gives me anxiety. And I talk to some of my other entrepreneurs who write, and they're like, oh, my God, you go through that too? So I decided to figure out a precaution or a cure for this. And I'm creating a new planner. So it's a dateless planner, and I'm holding myself accountable. And my boy is looking at me like, yeah, I've been hearing about this. So now I got Kim as an accountability
Absolutely.
Partner, and I got the thousands of people listening as accountability partners. So I'm creating a planner, 2020, and it's basically, hopefully it's going to come out mid second quarter. And it's a dateless planner. So every time you turn a page, it's not Tuesday or Wednesday. It could be 2 weeks from now, but the day before, it'll be full.
Right. Okay. Got it. Okay.
So it's when you, and it won't have a time. And that's another thing, because my schedule is not always, you know, 8 to 8. Sometimes I'm doing things at 9:30.
That's right.
You know, and that gives me anxiety because there's no place to put it.
I understand. Okay. Got you. Know?
So,
okay.
So now I'm like, where I put it? You know, so anyway, so I'm creating that. So that's something that, do you see a lot of your clients taking action where it's like to avoid something, they create a business, they filling a void like that?
Well, yeah, I think that can apply to many areas of one's life, you know. I mean, depending on the circumstances, I mean, what you describe basically is a trigger, right? So, you know, I mean, triggers really attach to trauma, but, you know, for this purpose, you can say, you know, seeing the blank on this is a trigger for you. So it starts your anxiety, it kicks up your anxiety. So, yes, so you avoid triggers, right? So once you know what they are, you do what you can to try and avoid them. Some are unavoidable. You know, if your mother's a trigger and you live with your mother, there's nothing much you can really do about it. You know, so you have to kind of prepare yourself to be triggered and then use the tools that you have available to you for when that happens. You know, so sometimes they can be avoided, but certainly, absolutely. I mean, you want to have things in place that allow you to control as much of your life as you possibly can. Okay. And I think that sometimes anxiety is an issue when people focus on things they can't control, right? So, you know, if you are, you know, in a bad relationship or a relationship is bad and, you know, it's causing you to have some anxiety and it's about what the other person is doing or not doing, you're setting yourself up for, you know, feeling anxious because you can never control what another person says or does. You know, you can only control what you say and do. So I think that that's where a lot of the learning goes on in the clinical setting is recognizing what can I control and what can I not control. And those things I can control, I'm going to control the hell out of them. You know, and that's where you should keep your focus, because then the more control you can feel you have over your life, then the less anxiety you will experience, more than likely.
Now, part of that control for your day, right? So majority of time, how many hours during the week, because you're seeing a lot of clients, how many hours during the week are you working on your business, not in your business?
So,
or do you have a team inside working on?
For the practice?
Yes, for the practice.
No, for the practice, it's just me. I'm a solopreneur right now. I'm in solo private practice. Group practices exist. It's not really something I wanted to venture into, only because, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that that I don't think I want to take on at this stage in my life. Although it can be very lucrative and it can be very good for, a community to have a group practice where you have several therapists working together under one name and kind of doing the work. It's not something I want to do. So I don't necessarily have a team of people. I have a virtual assistant who's my niece, Shaletta. Shout out to her. And she helps me with answering the calls and returning calls and setting people up for the next step, which is to communicate with me. So I have put that person in place. But I do my own billing. I do my own scheduling. And it's manageable for me. I have systems in place. I have electronic medical records, electronic health record system that I use. So everything is online. I'm paperless. Nice. So people fill out their documents before they come online, and it's filed there and kept there in HIPAA compliant. You know, confidentiality is a big thing. So all of my, systems are HIPAA compliant. So I've set my systems up so that I can pretty much do most of it. Is it a lot sometimes? Yes, it is. Do I fall behind in billing? Yes, I do. And I have to make the time to catch up. So, but it wouldn't be economically feasible for me to bring somebody in to do that, because technically I can do it myself.
You can't do it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But I do have colleagues who have group practices who have full on, like I said, my colleague Lisa, she has 32 therapists, and she has a office manager, she has a clinical manager, she's the CEO. I mean, she has a full-fledged group practice.
She doesn't
practice.
See any clients.
She does, actually. She does. Yeah,
wow.
Because but not that many.
Oh.
She may see like 5 a week or something like that.
It.
And that might be a lot. But she has her systems in place. So yeah, I mean, the practices can run from me being on my own by myself to a full group practice that has tons of therapists working and that have to kind of report to supervisors and things like that.
What do you consider to be your superpower?
Let's see. Let me think about that. What is my superpower? I think my ability to really sit and hear people. Yeah, I think really being able to take a situation and try to find many different alternative ways of seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think people have told me, although I don't always see this, but there's a calmness about me that I think allows people to feel comfortable. And that's innate. That's not something that I've had to like work on and hone. That's just kind of who I am. So I thank God for that. But I think that those things have allowed me to create really good relationships with people, as well as, you know, be a therapist that has a successful, thriving practice with people that call me and say they want me to work with them. So I think that those are couple of my superpowers.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So the show is called Faith, Grind, Inspire.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of these three words resonates with you?
Oh, gosh. I think faith, because without that, none of this would have ever happened. I think that in any venture that anybody takes on, it starts here, but, you know, there has to be a part of you that just believes it can happen and has the faith in that. I think that, you know, you can't plan every single step, and you're not always going to be able to predict every single outcome. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a piece of us that need to have faith in the process, and that if you stay in alignment with what it is that you feel is the right thing, or that you feel is your path, that opportunities show up in places you never would have expected, that decisions get to be made in ways that you never thought could have been, doors open. And, you know, I think that that all has to do with just having the faith that things are going to work out. And one way or the other, and not being so overly committed to the goal, mm-hmm. because, and what that's supposed to look like, because 9 times out of 10, what you thought it was going to be ain't even going to be what it is, you know, but, and that's okay. You mm-hmm. just have to be open and be willing to allow things to unfold. You're going to make your mistakes. That's part of the process. You learn from the mistakes, but I think having faith that the process works so long as you allow it to do what it's supposed to do, good things can happen.
I love that. That's probably one of the best answers.
Oh, yay for me.
Yeah. You do have a calmness on you. Like, I feel like I'm about to start telling you stuff. I'm like, let me go off this mic.
No, that's okay.
Because now you're making me think, like, oh, my God, the book is a trigger. Like, I'm back to the planet thing. Let me get out of here. So, and I'm trying to figure out, like, what in my childhood happened that made me.
Well, listen, if you really want to get clinical here, we can go there. But, yes, who we are today is absolutely related to what we experienced.
Yeah,
because
I'm trying to think, I'm like, why do I, you know? Because, like, I'm telling you, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
Like, my people will tell you, like, I'm like, you could tell when Gene's having a great week. When Gene's book is full, like, you're like, oh, he had control.
Well, you have tied, no, but you have also tied success to having a full book. Yeah. You've made that connection somewhere on your journey, and now that book is symbolic of, I'm producing, I'm grinding, yeah. I'm doing what I need to do. Things are good. When in fact, that's not necessarily true, because there's some people that can have a full book of busyness and they ain't producing nothing. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's some people that don't have a book at all who are grinding it out, and you see them doing the work. So you've made a connection somewhere along the line that if this book is full, and then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. So you see the book full, and it's like, I'm going to grind even more because the book is full, because I'm doing good, so I'm producing. So it's a system. I mean, we all create systems, and that's what works for you.
Yeah, that's one of the systems. And the funny thing is, majority of times, when the book isn't full, is because I had so much to do, you know.
You didn't have time.
I didn't have time to pull the book out, you know?
Yeah.
But sometimes for me, it's more of like, because I drop the ball sometimes when I don't. Like, if I spoke to you this week during my busy week,
mm-hmm.
and it was one of those weeks that I wasn't looking at my planner, and you're like, oh, yeah, Gene, let's meet next Wednesday at 3:00. I'm like, all right, cool. Didn't put you in my book.
Uh-huh.
So now, okay. Oh, we just made it to the end? Tim, we pause right here. So this is the end.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, no, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
That book, I wish I brought it. I didn't bring it because I didn't have space. because I was actually going to bring it to Right on the Train, but I had him, so I was like, forget it.
But that's like your security blanket. You're like, if I see the book and it looks full, I'm good. I'm doing good. And then when you see the book and it doesn't look full, it's like...
I close it. No, I close it.
Because there's a part of you that has said to yourself, if it's not full or if it doesn't have enough in it, then I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and you know what I hate too? Not to cut you off. Like, for example, that example where if you reach out to me and you say, Gene, let's meet next week, right, on a Wednesday. If I don't put you in my book, my assistant's going to reach out because now I look at my book and there's nothing there.
Right.
That means I have no meetings, you know?
Right.
And so now my assistant's like, someone's at the office. And I'm like, now I'm running. Now it's all panic. Now it's like... Cure.
Right.
So the precaution for me is to write everything down. Mm-hmm. So if I don't take the time to write down and try to go through text messages, and because I tell people all the time, let's meet. Like, you know, people want to meet with me all the time and ask questions. So, but I say yes, I commit, but I don't.
Always
I
might write it down.
I have to write it down.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, and especially for somebody like yourself, it's important to be able to. Or do a voice recording real quick. The phone is so. They have so many tools on there that you can do to utilize so that you don't forget anything.
But you want to know something, Kim? I'm going to be very transparent. This phone, and I might buy the most expensive one. This phone gives me anxiety. Because that's why I took off email. I haven't had email on this phone for almost a year, since last May. So it's coming up 2 months, it will be a year. And that gave me a piece of calm, right? Not having email on this phone. But I can't put, I put my calendar, I'm getting good. I put my calendar on here. Yeah, okay. So my calendar is on here. I put task on here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. I'm putting task. Good. I downloaded this app for those who want to know what app I use. It's called Wunderlist. WUND.
Okay.
Yeah. So Wunderlist. So I use Wunderlist. It's helping. But I move social media to like the last page.
Social media is a time suck if you don't bounce. My husband will say, I know he's about sick of me because I'm always on my phone, but not always social media stuff. I'm like, my schedule for my clients is on my phone. The notes that I have to do for clients are on my phone. The stuff that I'm doing online with my business partners. So I am working 9 times out of 10. And he's been very supportive, don't get me wrong, because he wants to see me succeed, and I'm appreciative of that. But I know he's about sick of me with that damn phone because he's in education, and educators, you know, they're not always up on the whole online business thing. He can't even fathom. You have a business partner you've never met her? I'm like, no. He's like, what?
Yeah.
And I'm saying, this is how the world works now. You can have whole businesses. People have whole relationships and they never even met. I said, I have a business partner. I haven't met her, but we do business.
That's
like,
so cool.
Okay. So it's a whole new world. But yeah, the phone can be, you know, you have to manage. It's like anything else. You have to know how to manage it. Otherwise, it will take over your life. And I need to get better at that. But it is something that can definitely, you know, cause havoc in your relationships, in your career, in your business, if you're not careful.
That's very true. Yeah. That's very true. So, absolutely. Kim, I don't want to make this a session about me. So before it goes too further, I get too deep, right?
that's my magical power.
Yes. I see it.
Magical power. People are like, I'm not telling you nothing, and then before you know it, they're telling the whole life story. Yeah. That's okay. It's all good.
Yeah. So where can people find you? Where can people find a book? Tell me everything.
Okay, so there's several places. For clinical stuff, I'm located in Valley Stream, Long Island, which is very close to Queens. My website is KNIGHT Counseling, KNIGHT Counseling.com. They can find me there. If they want to check out the podcast,
yes, the podcast,
the name of the podcast is Relationship Recipes. It is on iTunes. My hope is 2020 to get back to it and create a more consistent schedule, but we have some really good episodes on there. And then the book also is called Relationship Recipes. It is available on Amazon.com. They can find it there. It's a really good, it's not a book for if you're in crisis with your relationship. That is not what it's for, but it certainly is a good book for if, say, you want to tune up, let's say, in your relationship, or you want to, you know, create more, you want to get better at what you're doing. I think that it's a great tool to use. And I have a lot of colleagues who also use it with their couples. So yeah, those are the three main places. If you happen to be a clinician as a therapist and you're looking to go into private practice, if that's the case, then you can go to clinicians of color.org.com, and there you can find us. We have a great membership site for those who want to learn how to set up and be a business owner in private practice.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Thank you, Kim, so much.
Thank you
for coming on.
This
guys
is great.
Yeah, thank you so much. You bomb. Right. Shout out to my sister Alvina Austin. Like
Alvina,
yeah,
her daughter just had a baby.
Yeah. She's like 3 months now.
Oh wow. Yeah, she's beautiful.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm excited for her. Yeah.
Shout out to the family. God mm-hmm. bless. So guys, thank you for tuning in to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspired Podcast. Thank you to Mrs. Knight. You were the bomb.
Thank you.
I really had fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
And
this
so,
is great.
Yeah.
Thank
yeah.
you
and
for
you
having
me. Figure out my triggers. So I
Thank
get it.
You for
I love
having
it.
Me.
And so I need you guys to check out her podcast. I need you guys to go support the book. And follow her. And do you have a social media?
Yes, actually I do. So for Twitter and for Instagram, it's Kim. Truth Be Told, because that's the name of my coaching company, is Truth Be Told Coaching.
Okay.
So, yeah. So they can find me there, too.
Perfect.
Yeah, but all that stuff is on the podcast, and all of that stuff is on the website, too. So wherever they go, they can find it.
All right.
Okay.
So, guys, thank you guys for tuning in to another great episode of Faith Grind Inspire. Every Wednesday, you can catch us on here, on YouTube, on Spotify, on Instagram, on everything. Wherever you guys listen to us for the past, like, 90-something episodes, continue. Thank you so much for your support. God bless. Keep grinding. And don't stop.